It's 8:45 on the clock. We'll call the order of the Board of Supervisors meeting for Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. We will start by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Opens Meeting Act is posted on the east wall. Attendance by observation, Jurgens, Hill, Bauman, Dorn, Lytle, Byers, and Tiemann. The Consent Agenda. One is the general agenda. Two is approve the minutes of the meeting held January 18th, 2017. Approve all claims through February 1st, 2017 in the amount of $466,174.82, except claim number 17020076 to Johnny's Welding in the amount of $85.70, and claim number 17020091 to Motorola Solutions in the amount of $12,088 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence receive. Approve canceling checks number 1510094 to Black Hills Energy in the amount of $22.67. Number 1609095 to Farmers Co-op in the amount of $24.86. Number 1612039 to Farm and Home Publishers in the amount of $1,450. Number 1701241 to Cypress Benefit Administrations in the amount of $48,581.98. And number 1701040 to Family Medicine Washington in the amount of $200.80. Number six is approved specs and call for bids for spring 2017 rock and gravel. Bids to be opened on March 1st, 2017 at 9:15 a.m.
Okay, I would appreciate an explanation on the canceling of all those checks, please.
Okay. On the checks, we have a couple of them that are listed on there that they indicated that they did not ever receive the check, and so they added it on to another statement, and so we have to cancel these to clear them out of our bank statement. The Farm and Home Publishers, that they changed their process from the year before, where now they want us to pay them at the end on the number of books. These are for plat books, the number of books that we sell, instead of paying them up front and then they reimbursing us for what we don't sell. So that was a procedure change that they didn't tell us until after we had already sent the check. The Cypress one is to be to Gage County, because we are holding the account now in our bank here and paying medical claims through that account. And the Family Medicine Washington, I've discussed that with Gus. That was an overpayment on a prisoner, and the way they sent the statements, Sheriff's Office couldn't have known, we couldn't have known, and so I visited with Gus and Tony and Julie yesterday, and they're going to talk with Washington on how to proceed on getting their billings clear. So, any other questions on that?
Anything else? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Bauman and seconded by Byers. Vote 7-0 in favor. Entertain a motion to approve or disapprove the claim number 17020091 to Motorola Solutions, Inc. in the amount of $12,088.
So moved.
Second.
Approved by Bauman, seconded by Tiemann. I think let's have Gus come up and explain this a little bit. This is what happened there.
This claim was discussed at committee on Monday. This was approved by the board, I think, back in 2015, if I remember correctly. And so, of course, it goes through the process of having to have the repeater made by Motorola. Well, in the process of this, the city was going to put a repeater on a tower here in town. So they said, let's wait and see before we order one right now for you guys to see what kind of cover you get with that one versus one we're getting for here. So the time that process got done, they went ahead and ordered and got ours put together. It was couple months ago, the claim coming through. And so that was some of the issues up. The repeater we have right now is a portable one that sits here in the courthouse. And that's used for staff and now the courthouse because we can't penetrate the walls without that extra boost in the repeat. This one here replaces that one. That'd be a permanent one. The one we have now was in a case we're using for like fair week, natural disasters, incident command area, things like that. It moves around with us. So it's still a perfectly good repeater. It was just never intended to be here full time. So it's just taken a while to process through all that. And so that's kind of why it took a delayed amount of time to get the claim to run through the process. And I guess I apologize. I thought I had that attached. I did have it attached on here, but apparently it wasn't enough of an explanation on why it took so long to get this point in time.
Well, it was more of the time. We seen the 2015, normally outside of what we'll approve a claim for.
Right.
And that's why we had more questions, and that's why delayed this. This was
two weeks ago
there, and we delayed it till this week, and then we put it on here so that a claim that needed an explanation a little bit of why it was delayed. And
well, everybody here should know that, except for some people weren't here at the meeting. So, so that's what it was for. So,
any more questions about that claim? If not, we have a motion to approve. Vote 7-0 in favor. I entertain a motion to approve or disapprove the claim 17020076 to Johnny's Welding in the amount of $85.70. The total dollar amount of the claims approved through February 1st, 2017 is $466,260.52.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Thiemann, seconded by Bauman.
Isn't that $85.70 pretty high? Isn't that, was that appropriate as far as the amount was concerned?
You might need to negotiate that next time.
Yeah, next time we'll decide first who's going to negotiate it.
And that's quite a bit for one nut and one bolt.
Yes.
It was a big one.
Government contract.
It was a big one. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? No. 6 in favor with Juergens abstaining. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. I think most of everybody's here for our 9 o'clock time event with the veteran. So, committee reports, building and ground winter lights.
Dave? Dave is my employer. He just takes care of everything that I need
So. He makes you look good, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
If I can brag a little bit about Dave Jones again, I come by here and check the courthouse about 27 times a week, and I can't come by day or night, Saturday, Sunday, holidays, that Dave isn't here working, doing something. And I just want to compliment him. We are so fortunate to have you as our building, our grounds custodian.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you. It's handy to live close by.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes
it hurts.
It helps with those 3 o'clock in the morning phone calls.
It does. I can actually look out my bedroom window and see what's going on and then give you an answer. good morning. I gave a preliminary report during the Building and Grounds Committees on Monday on the mechanical end if we were to convert the West garages into office space. And I did receive a bid from Prairie Homes on doing building the walls and all that, so I'm going to go through this real quick. To turn the garage into office space, this bid would be for the HVAC system, which would be gas, furnace, and air conditioner, a glass door for the entryway with side lights and a handicapped opener, a handicapped accessible restroom, fixtures, and to hook up to the existing sewer, carpet for the offices, ceramic tile for the lobby, a new electrical panel would have to be brought into the garage, and that would include all the light fixtures, electrical plugins. And then Prairie Homes gave us a bid for all flat concrete prep and work. That would be, they had to get a subcontractor to give a bid. The architect, Mike Fakler, recommended a product called Gypcrete, that would level the floors, and they do not do that. They'd have to have a subcontractor come in and do that. And then they would do the walls, metal framing, drywall finish, drop in tile ceilings, door frames and doors, exterior finish and windows on the south, painting and trim, insulation, and then they just have a note that this does not include any of the HVAC, electrical, or plumbing. The only thing this bid does not include would be no outdoor grading or the concrete work if we were to put a half circular drive-through in there. That does not include any of that work. And so far the total of this preliminary bidding would be $140,743.
That's for basically the two bids combined.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And I guess this is a starting point. I know they've kind of been throwing some ideas around on what would be best, and I think, you know, we could tweak some things also. So
that doesn't have any of your safety openers or electronic locks or anything on it?
It does not. I've talked to Diode. I know we have some open ports over there yet, and he said as long as we have open ports, it's mainly just running the Cat6 cable to the garage, and then we'd have to pay for that part, but we don't have to upgrade our system. So it'd be some cameras and some, the card access readers.
And then the flat work outside. So we're probably in that 180 to 200 range realistically altogether, or yes. Something under 200.
I know what I'm wondering, yeah.
And this is from based off of his that last design. Well, Gus, I thought that was Gus sitting back there, but this is kind of off that last design that we had.
It is, yes.
And that's what the people were looking at when they're giving these bids or estimates.
Yes, it is. And they did talk to Mike Fakler, and that's, he gave them some specs that he would like to have, and it's pretty much the things that I talked about. And that's where I did bring up. I think they were going to just use like a floor leveler, and he recommended this Gypcrete product that would have to be supplied by a subcontractor. And they did mention to me that that added quite a bit of cost to the work.
That might be something we could explore too if we go that route, because they would have an idea what they could level the floor with, I'm sure.
Well, it gives us some starting points as far as moving forward in this next budget, and I sure wish we would have passed building a new sheriff's department, but we're going to keep pouring hundreds of thousands of dollars into this thing. So,
well, it's cheap compared to the radios.
So,
glass half full.
Anything else for us outside here?
No, but today is February now, so I'm going to get started on those restrooms. I keep pushing it back, but February is the month, so I'm going to...
No, appreciate the work you've done on this and working with Fakler and Gus and stuff and getting us basically a design and a cost, an estimate now so that we have something to go by, and I know the discussion will continue.
Yes.
One other thing we have to keep in mind is if we go forward with this, we also have to figure out some type of storage building.
Yes.
We talked to Fakler while he was here a little bit, and we walked around and looked for different areas where something like that could work, but we haven't really come up with anything. So there will be an additional expense for that if this project goes forward, plus potential of getting rid of the old house as well. But the old house may work as a temporary storage area too, so I don't know what we'll end up with.
We'll keep moving forward.
Yeah, I think at our next committee meetings again, we'll hopefully have some more discussion on it or see what maybe a direction we still desire to go. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Equalization.
Nothing new.
Finance and insurance.
Supervisor Juergens will go through expenditures.
Okay. SAND, Southeast Nebraska Development District membership, $11,692. Postage meter, $10,000. Almon Law, professional legal services, $10,540. Domina Law Group, professional legal services, $19,342.02. Wolf Snowden Herd, Lures and Awe, professional services, $28,900. Professional legal services. Cypress Benefit Administration, $23,629. Gage County Health Insurance, $45,901. Motorola Solutions Incorporated, Sheriff's Department, $12,088. Masonry Construction Incorporated, Phase 3 of the restoration of the courthouse, $46,313. That's it, Mr.
Chairman.
And
that was probably for the west side here that they did? The masonry construction.
Yes, it is. He did send that as a partial payment. There is actually three phases, so we still have two more phases. That is completed.
That's completed, but there will be another bill or two coming yet?
Yes.
Because, I thought he was higher than that when he bid.
Right, yeah. Okay. It'll be about that same amount again.
Thank you. And Terry mentioned several. There were several law firms on there this time, and most of those were related to the Beatrice Six part. And Monday I asked Dawn, and she gave I have an updated figure on what we spent, including those claims. Is since we've started on the Beatrice Six, the county now has spent $1,520,788 on legal fees. That's the county's part that has come out of operations that we've spent as we've gone along. So, but that does include those. So that's where the county's currently at on those legal fees. So then we do have a timed event at 9 o'clock here this morning, and it's 9:02 on the clock. So, and I see Alvin's here now, so we can go ahead and start. So Phil, we'll call you up and have our veterans honor.
All right. This morning we'd like to honor our veteran, Alvin Weber from Adams. He was a mortar crewman and a corporal in the Korean War. He served from January 15th of 1951 to October 16th of 1952. He was awarded the Combat Infantry Badge, the Korean Service Medal with one Bronze Star, United Nations Service Medal, along with others. This time I'd like to introduce Alvin Weber. Whatever you want. If you want to talk about your service, or if you want to show some of these things, you're more than welcome.
I got a few pictures here. You anybody want to look at them or not?
Sure, we'll hand them around there.
I mean, very plain, but
that's from the uniform.
That.
Oh yeah.
Got a Korean badge too, but I couldn't find that.
You went on the Korean Honor Flight, too, didn't you?
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, you want to talk a little bit about what you did when you were over there?
Well, we left over to California, babe, on the Pope ship, and it was 21 days in the water. I ain't no good speaking.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
When I got over there, I was assigned to a mortar squad. And never was very good. Just been an old farmer, and couldn't have even had a pickup back home. Got over there. They signed me as a truck driver. Maybe a ton and a half truck. That's something different, too. And what was it? We had four squads in our platoon, I guess it was, four different mortars. And we done most of our traveling at night. And funny, we didn't end up accidents. The only thing you could go by the park lights ahead of you.
We had a
firing squad one night, two different nights. Was fired most of the night. And the tubes on the mortars got so hot, they got red hot, we couldn't keep firing anymore. I had to let them cool off. And also remembered one morning, just before sun up, they had an airstrike on one big hill not too far from us. The whole hill was on fire. The Air Force, they bombed the whole hill side. It was solid fire. And about 10 minutes later, everything cleared. And you could see all everything was burned on the hillside. And about after everything cleared, they came up all different. Dug out, people came out again. Well,
now, Elvin, we have a little something from the county board here that we'd like to give you, and I know we have another deal too for the ladies that'll come on up here in a minute, but the county board started this program 2-3 years ago now, probably 3 years ago, and we have a little something to thank you for your service. It's a little bit of appreciation that the county can show you, thanking you for what you did. The donuts there, Alvin Sunday gave me a bad time about if there'd be donuts here today, so there is donuts for Alvin here today. So, and if the box isn't empty when you leave, then something's wrong, okay?
Thank you.
Okay.
Alvin, on behalf of the county, I would like to give you this certificate and this as a appreciation for your time and service, sir.
Thank you very much,
Alvin. Thank you very much.
And now we have a group here from Adams and Susan, whoever's going to come up, they have an award, too, they are going to give. So, yeah. And if somebody would like to talk, so they're close enough so that it's on the mic, so...
I have a loud voice. Can you hear me?
Go around over to that one. Yeah.
Okay.
And explain what you're doing here. So.
I also want to thank all those responsible for getting the green flight in order for one day trip. And also for those that donated so I could go.
you could go.
Thank you.
Yeah, Alvin was able to go, I believe, a little over a year ago to that, as several others were. And the group from Adams has learned, well, not the group from Adams has learned, they are doing one more honor flight. They plan on it being the last Korean honor flight. There is either four or five planes going to come out of Nebraska this time, which is just amazing. And they are seeking donations, but that some of the people that have gone on those honor flights, and then I think we had a group of them here one time, came back and talked that the impact that has had on them and stuff. So go ahead.
Okay. County officials, veterans, family, and friends. Our quilting group, Forest Acres Quilting Club, on behalf of the Quilt of Valor Foundation, is honored to be here this morning. We have made a Quilt of Valor that we wish to present today to a deserving recipient, Alvin G. Weber. He has served our country and fought for the freedoms we enjoy today. With this presentation, we express our gratitude and thanks for his service. The Quilts of Valor Foundation is a national organization. It includes quilters from all across the United States. It was started by a quilter named Catherine Roberts, who had the idea of comforting veterans with quilts during the time her son was deployed in Iraq. Since then, over 151,000 quilts have been awarded in the United States, Germany, Iraq, and Afghanistan. And our mission is to honor our service members and veterans who have been touched by war. For those of us who have never seen combat or been in a war zone, such experiences are beyond our capacity to comprehend. But we believe the quilts we make will offer both comfort and warmth. When you feel the need for the warmth of a grateful hug, try wrapping your quilt around you so it can provide the comfort that we have sewn into every seam. A Quilt of Valor presents a three-part message from our hearts. First, we honor you for your service. We honor you for leaving what you held dear and stood in harm's way in a time of crisis, protecting us and many others from the effects of war. Next, our quilters know that freedom is not free. The cost of freedom is the dedication of lives of men and women like you, and the quilts are meant to say thank you for your sacrifice. Also, the quilt is meant to offer you comfort and to remind you that although family and friends cannot be with you at all times, you are forever in their thoughts and hearts. We know that a quilt consists of three layers held together by the quilting stitches, and we think of the layers in this way. The top layer of the quilt, with its many colors, shapes, and fabrics, represents the communities and the many individuals that we are. The batting, or the filler, is the center of the quilt, its warmth. It represents our hope that the quilts we make will bring warmth, comfort, peace, and healing to the individuals who receive them. The backing is the strength that supports the other layers. It represents the strength of the recipient, the support of families, communities, and nations. Each stitch that holds the layers together represent love and gratitude. Alvin G. Weber was a member of the United States Army. He enlisted in Beatrice in October 1949. His unit was the 35th Infantry, and his foreign service was in Korea. He was discharged from duty at Camp Stoneman in Pittsburgh, California, and he earned the Korean Service Medal. Before we present the quilt, we would like to thank Thrivent for providing some financial assistance with the purchase of materials used to make the quilt. On this quilt is a label that tells the names of those who worked on it. As of today, this quilt becomes your story, Alvin. We want you to have this quilt as a tangible reminder that there are thousands of men and women across this land who are forever in your debt. On behalf of the Quilt of Valor Foundation, it is our pleasure to honor you with this Quilt of Valor Award. Welcome home.
Thank you very much. never expected this.
And we want to thank you, too, very, very much, Alvin. And as we thanked all the veterans, this program has been quite something for the county. And the ladies had visited with me several other times about the Quilt of Valor, which I wasn't familiar with. And it worked out good to have them here for this honor, along with what we're doing here and stuff. So really appreciate that. Really appreciate that we can honor some of our veterans in the county, so that thank them for the service that they've done. Tremendous.
Thank you, Alvin.
Well, thank you for choosing me as a Veterans of the Month. I appreciate it.
You bet. Next on the agenda is the committee, back to the committee reports, human resource and employee relations. Oh, just a minute, John. Hold it. Yep. We have a time event. I didn't look at that. Thank you, Don, reminding me here. We have a time event at 9:15. I entertain a motion to close, and it's 9:17 on the clock, by the way. Close, accept, reject, or award bid on surplus vehicle.
Make a motion to close bids, 9:17.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, seconded by Hill. Vote. 7-0 in favor. And do we have any bids, I guess?
I should have two here somewhere.
Is this from the Sheriff's Department, Link, or something? Here, you can open them. And I know, Eric, you talked a little bit about last time. We'll see what the bids come in at, but that there's maybe another option you're familiar with, too. So we'll...
But for $12,000 to cover that Motorola,
it won't make up for that.
We have a bid on the 2007 Dodge Charger, bin number 2B3KA4387H845328, in the amount of $528. We have a bid on the 2009 Dodge Charger, bin number 2B3KA43T39H569129. The bid is $728. And these bids are from Bay Ridge Motors, 1869 Richmond Terrace, Staten Island, New York. This is a bid for the 2009 Gray Dodge Charger, bin number 2B3KA43T39H569129. The bid is $900 from Julie Spear in Wymore, Nebraska. And those are our bids.
I'd make a motion to reject all bids and try and go a different route.
Second.
I think we're just giving them away.
Yeah. Do these cars run, Sheriff?
They run.
Are they beat up?
That's why they're off the road.
That, or I'll give double that on each of them, and I'll sell them.
Well, we have to decide what different route. I mean, that you can't bid here today. You can't do that because the bids were closed. We accept, reject, or...
I'd make a motion to reject all bids.
We have a motion by Bauman to reject all bids and a second by Tiemann to reject all bids. So that's what we need to have discussion on and vote on first. So, but the discussion is that we'd like to reject the bids that we received. Or that's the motion, to reject the bids.
I think we could look into just putting them up on auction and I mean, we obviously aren't getting anything out of these when we when we sell them like this. If they're terrible beat up or they don't run, I could see these prices, but it's pretty rough to just give stuff away that's not ours. It's the public's cars.
Well, the motion is to reject the bids that were received. So let's vote on that first. Everybody ready to vote? Vote 7-0 to reject the bids that we received on these. Now, you want to wait 2 weeks and have a discussion, or should I have a discussion today? How to proceed with it?
Maybe we can just—I mean, they're not take. I mean, they're just sitting there now. So maybe we can figure out a way whether we put them on an auction site or something down the road.
At our next committee meeting in 2 weeks, then we'll talk about it, and then hopefully we'll have something at our next board meeting to approve how to go forward with dealing with the cars. Then, so okay, back to the Human Resources Committee report.
We had some discussion on the call-out policy, and we're going to have further discussion today. We didn't meet with the Extension Office, but we're going to be setting that up.
Okay. Law Enforcement Emergency Management.
Nothing additional on top of what we've already got discussion for or have discussed.
Road and Bridge.
We had a discussion on the specs for the spring rock and gravel. Those bids will be open March 1st, and we'll have going to accept the bids. We had discussion on the culvert project north of Ellis, the Beatrice West project. Votescapes has the low bid of $267,571.30. We had discussion on the 1 and 6 year plan, and we'll be talking about that more today. Galen had a handout for us on the fuel bids that are going to be opened on February 15th. Galen had discussion on the truck accident and fire on the PWF road north of Odell that caused damage to the road. He has an estimate of approximately $4,800 on that will be turned into the truck owner's insurance. Galen had discussion on the easements on the culvert project on the Ellis Road north of Ellis. The easement on the west side has been agreed to be donated, and he had an estimate on the east side for $2,320 that Galen was going to revisit with him about. That was for easement and fence on that side. We had further discussion on the 1 and 6 year plan, including possible shouldering of some of the asphalt roads, and we discussed actually adding the county blacktop roads that have previously been recommended by Manelli Wagner as needing an overlay to be added back into the 6 year plan, and we'll discuss that more today. And Myron received an email from Burlington in regards to the crossing on Hickory Road, and it hopes to be done in the March April time period. And we had some discussion on some potholes just off of Highway 77 going west of the city landfill and the county spur. Some of this was originally state maintenance. They have since decided it was county maintenance without notifying the county. I guess that's it.
Just the very last one there, this culvert project that we're doing here, that bid that later on we're going to accept or accept
right.
The bids.
That's the other thing we had discussion on. The asphalt over top of it will be the county's expense and equipment doing it.
The county's going to do the asphalt. The bid it includes all of the culverts and dirt work. The asphalt part is something that the county's going to do and stuff. So that's not part of the bid. So.
And that includes the subgrading preparation.
Subgrading, all that, yeah. The bid will include all the grading. Anything else for Road and Bridge? If not, we'll move on. Next item on the agenda, Sheriff Gustafson will introduce a new deputy. And I'm not going to try and pronounce that name. I'll let Gus pronounce that name.
It's a tongue twister sometimes.
Yeah.
Today I'm pleased to introduce to you Joe Bolzano. He has been with us for about 2-3 years, a part-time deputy. Joe is old school like I was. He went through the academy back in the 80s, was it?
It was in the
70s. 70s, even as far as my, yeah. And he was in law enforcement for several years there. He's with, I believe, Cheyenne County Sheriff's Office, Cass County Sheriff's Office, Aurora PD, I think.
Sir.
Then the last 25-plus years
yes, sir.
Was the Department of Corrections and retired as associate warden. He thought he'd try a little different stress level, and so we're grateful for that. He has been a breath of fresh air from the old school coming in to help out. So, like I said, he's been with a few weeks, and he's doing a bang-up job for us. It's when you start in the 70s and 80s and you end up doing it again, it's just different. It's a wake-up call, a little different. Computers are heard of now, and they weren't then, so... But anything you'd like to say? Tell them anything?
It's been an interesting journey for me. I've been doing this for over 40 years in between that. So I'm really honored to come back into law enforcement. I'm not quite ready to hang up anything yet, so a few years. But I really enjoy this opportunity to work for Gus and the fellows over there. Last night was a long night. A little incident that occurred in Barnston last night, but that got handled appropriately, and that went very well. So I'm very glad to be here. I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to the county, and glad to have you.
Thank you.
So when you were at the academy with Gus, how proficient was he at learning how to ride a horse?
No, I was there before he was. You went what, 70 what?
I was there in 79.
Yeah, I was through 75, so... You just got to push it, don't you? You're bad as Jurgen. I don't know what it is about that. But.
I heard it was a mule.
It's a jack something, all right, I'll tell you that. All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to meet you. Next item on the agenda is to accept, reject, or award bids for the Culvert Project, Beatrice West Project Number C-34. And I... Mark or Galen, want to come forward and give us your recommendation? Good morning, Mark.
We met with...
Could you identify yourself?
Mark Minnelli.
Yeah.
Minnelli Wagner and Associates is recognized. And by the way, I want to step back just 1 second here. That what you guys are doing for... Every time I come, you guys are honoring a vet. I go to a lot of board meetings, and that is so cool. What you guys are doing, and it would really be neat if there's some way we could present that at NACO to try to get other boards to do that. I'm not saying other boards aren't doing things like that, but that is absolutely way cool. So I'm it just
good idea.
Cool. Yep. Back to this project. We've got I haven't had this many bids on a box culvert in decades. We got a bunch of new contractors that are coming in. Some of them are getting experienced people and starting crews. We haven't had any jobs with this contractor yet. We interviewed him. He has done work for other counties. We visited with those counties, and they said that the experience was good. So Minnelli Wagner recommends. I recommend that you award this to the. Low bid, the Votescapes Incorporated.
And give the dollar amount.
The dollar amount is $267,571.30.
Mark, does it say on there, I think I remember seeing it, what was the time frame? Was that May, I think?
May 1st, start date, yeah. Completion July 1st.
267,571.30. So. I make a motion to approve.
Second.
A motion by Jurgen, seconded by Thiemann, to approve awarding the bid to, I can't remember the name, Votescapes.
Votescapes.
Yep. This is an established company, just not
in this area.
In this area
that's right.
Of work. So they're a company that's been
They had a Bennett address, but they've done some other counties and stuff. They've been working with some other counties, and they are, I think Galen had that they are a state-approved bidder.
They are.
So... No, there was quite a range between the bids,
you know,
for various reasons. And this came in, I think, under what your estimate was of a little
That's
over
correct.
300. A little bit what we visited about in the budget, in Galen's budget, I think we had $200,000 for this project originally. And then we've talked here at the committee meeting several times with Galen about where's the other funding going to come out. And we really talked quite a bit when... We thought it was going to be over $300,000 and stuff, and this still is over the $200,000. But Galen has some lines in the budget, his budget, that he talked about that he is aware of and will be adjusting some of the other lines in and stuff so that this can all be taken out of his budget.
I've seen a lot of boxes bidding this year. Do we have any other box culverts ready or that we're anticipating doing? Or?
You have one more box culvert. We'll talk about it when we do the 1 and 6, and it's one of your sites that were selected for, I believe the box was selected for your state innovative bridge funds, which I don't think we got the contract yet,
not yet.
Out. So the counties are starting to get their contracts. So that's the only other box that we've got in the mill.
We were just talking with this many bidders on jobs like this. This might be a good year. Of course, next year may be good still, too.
Yeah, oh, listen, if these guys are going to stay in the game.
Some aggressive bidding.
Yeah, you did. You had 2, 4, 6, 8 bids, a $100,000 span for such a small job. We should take advantage of it, but, you know, we've been. And when we get to the 1 and 6, we'll talk about our small bridge program, but. Because we're still pretty aggressive with that, but we're going to run out of those sites eventually.
That's not a problem.
I'll make one more comment, though. You know, this is one bridge, again, in the county that we're replacing. And, you know, with our overlay and everything else we've done in the past several years, we've been pretty aggressive, and we've gotten quite a few replaced with culverts or whatever. Now, this is one of the first we've done box culverts in a while. But I think... I know there's other counties, they talk about the cost and the upkeep of the roads and your bridges, and I know you've been involved with that a lot. Here again, this is one road, one bridge, and now I'm not complaining at all about the cost. I think we got a great cost, but you're looking at $270,000 to replace that one project. And think of how many we have in the county. Not saying they'd all cost near that much, but some of the cost, what it takes to keep the roads up and keep the bridges up and all of that, Lancaster County's really going through it, too, and
yes.
as many other counties are, I'm sure you're aware of. And it, we're doing what we can, but there still is a lot of need out there. So,
well, we've been aggressive, as you all know, on our small bridge program. And if you read the paper, particularly from up north or around, the small bridges are the ones that are biting them because they were concentrating on their large bridges. And we've been concentrating on smaller ones, and a lot of them that get closed are those type of bridges. So we've been identifying those and trying to get the worst ones out so that we keep our routes open. So,
and we'll talk more about it in our 1 and 6. So thank you, Mark.
Is Minnelli Wagner going to offer anything like a 50-50 split on bridge design?
Absolutely.
Any more discussion? If not, we have a motion to approve that bid for $267,571. A vote. 7-0 in favor. Next up, discussion on the 2017 1 and 6 year plan. And Galen or Mark or whoever would like to, I'll just make one quick comment. We do have a public hearing scheduled on this for next meeting, our February 15th meeting. There is a public hearing which we are required to have on the 1 and 6 year plan. And we also will plan on voting on our 1 and 6 year plan because it has to be done by a certain time to get it up to the state and stuff. So our next... February 15th, yeah, it's got to be done by the end of February. We don't have another meeting. So our February 15th meeting, we will have a public hearing, and we will be voting on the 1 and 6 year plan. Everybody should have got a copy.
Okay, I'll just start in. On the one-year plan, we have 13 culverts that will be replacing small bridges. We have 5 culverts that are going to be replacing culverts. We have 2 bridges, north of 12 Nemaha. That is a federal aid bridge. Tentatively set for a December letting this year,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. We also have another little bridge east of 31 Blue Springs, Wymore. We do have 2 box culverts that will be replacing bridges, the one we just voted on, and also the one that Mark will talk a little bit on the county bridge master program with the state. We also have 9 armor coat and paint striping projects in the county. We do have a 1.5-mile grading project north of 15 Riverside that we'll be doing this summer. And 2 shouldering projects, PWF West and Wymore Liberty shouldering to finish up from overlay for 2 years ago, I believe. So that's just a brief on, and I'll let Mark talk from here.
Okay, it's a good balanced project. This map is in your half size. It's in there. You've got a couple of maps. One is the last year's one-year plan, and it tells you if it's been complete, moved to the six-year, drop. Some of those culvert projects, we may have the culverts. They didn't get completed. They didn't get seeded, so they'd show as a delay. And then you've got the 1 and 6. So your one-year plan is what we feel we've got fiscally bound this year with our two budget cycle that we can get accomplished this summer. That's the road department goals. And as like Galen said, we really concentrated on spreading the projects out throughout the county for our infrastructure system for all the constituents, and most of them are will be done fairly fiscally sound. If you go back to the back of your books, there is a new form. It used to be called the Form 7. The State Board of Classifications and Standards have revamped this form. And in there you can see down at the bottom for each project is our preliminary estimates on what each one of those projects costs. So if you're looking at it and you kind of want to know what's going on there, you can see what the project is and what our estimated cost is. So one of the things Galen and I do at this time of the year is we kind of lump all that together and make sure that we've got that kind of money in our budget now. So the culverts, we rough size the culverts generally. We're usually pretty close by this point. Not all of them are completely through the process, but we rough size them, so the estimate should be fairly close. The one box culvert that Galen mentioned, we did apply through the governor's innovative and the legislature's innovative bridge funds. We did get selected in the first round for that box culvert. We're waiting on the agreement from the state. We'll review the agreement. You'll see an interlocal agreement come between us and the counties that we went in on. I think it was Oda County and Nemaha County that we had gone in on. One county will be the lead county. We'll bid them all. State will pay to the lead county, and Gage County's lead county, yes. And yours. So there'll be interlocal agreements. You'll see that, and we'll have more discussions about that and how that funding break out as soon as we get those agreements. Basically, they're paying 55% or up to $150,000 for that for our project. One of the things that you're going to notice on our higher volume roads is last summer the state adopted new minimum design standards, and lower volume roads, it impacted us for design speed from a minimum of 30 to 40 and only for short areas, but on the higher average daily traffics of over 400, it really impacts us hard, because what it does is it takes the driving lane and then it establishes a lateral clear zone that we have to have a 4-to-1 side slope. So what does that mean? That means that if I've got over 400 ADT, my shoulders got longer, wider. So if we do overlay projects and it's over 2-inch overlay, it could be done as what's called a 3R, but we've got to look at the shoulders, accident history, other issues along the road that we have to do a study and decide whether or not we've got to make improvements to. If it's new and reconstruction, the culverts on higher traffic loads, roads will get longer because of that 4-to-1 side slope. And generally that'll impact us on if we've got more than about 5 or 6 foot of fill over a culvert. So there was consequences to those standards, and we're seeing it on the higher traveled ways. You're going to see a lot bigger shoulders. So as we go to county roads and do grading and add shoulders, we can't just arbitrarily add a shoulder anymore. We have to build it to those standards.
Maybe when you're going to do traffic counts on those roads, coordinate with the sheriff, and they could really patrol that so we decrease the traffic count on those roads under the 400.
Sometimes you got to put barricades up to protect your, you know, your equipment.
Yeah.
Mark, is there a way to do like a multi-stage approach to that, if we're doing a 2-inch overlay, do like a leveling mill and then put 2 inches down 1 year and then come back in a couple of years and put another 2 inches?
Well, they've thought of that. I sat on the committee that wrote the rules, and that question came up. So there's an intent discussion in there. What's the intent of your overlay? Is it for just a driving surface, or is it for structural thickness? And if you read it, you do 2 inches this year, 2 inches this year, net 4 inches. Are they both 3 R's? I think it's obvious what our intent is. So what would they do? That's a good question.
Probably nothing. That was a question.
That board controls your highway allocation. So if they come in and we circumvent their rules, each time we do that, it's 10% of your highway allocation is what they can do to us. And our highway allocation is $1.5 million, Galen? $1.8 million?
$1.8 million.
So $180,000 for every time we do that and get caught.
That would be kind of an expensive.
It wouldn't be good.
Well, this is through the Board of Classifications to start with?
Board of Classifications and Standards establish those minimum design standards.
And they sure haven't helped us on anything else.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but.
I was going to say, surely we could appeal there and they would understand.
Nothing like talking to the wall.
Yeah, they're perfectly common sense people.
So that manual went from literally one page to quite the document. So if you're interested in it, I'll show you.
Do you feel safer, though, now?
I sleep a lot better, yeah. Well, I tell you what, like on overlay jobs, like the ones that we did with the bond a few years ago, we'd have had to have some pretty significant shoulders on there in counties that were doing that now. We're literally breaking the project and building the shoulders year one because of the effort and how long it takes and the damage to the roads. And then we come in and do the overlay because then we can patch because of the.
And that's kind of what Monday John brought up a little bit and stuff. We had discussion about on, you know, looking forward X number of years, some of these roads that maybe we're thinking about doing this, should we start and we're going to maybe add some to our six-year plan to add some of those roads so that at least we're starting to look at the shoulder, the culverts, and all of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Way ahead of time. That's a good plan.
It was a good idea.
It is a good idea.
And I think there's no question that we need to add to the six-year plan all the blacktop miles that Manelli Wagner recommended, and some of those recommendations are already 4 years old, and some of them are 2 or 3, you know, but they've all been in place for some time, and they at least need to get added to the six-year plan and start the shouldering process.
So that we can get them
on our
radar.
Shouldering them now, yeah. And look at our accident histories and see if we're having, get with the sheriff and find out if there's hot spots, and we can start there and get the shoulders widened. And
especially if they, which a lot of us didn't realize, the new designs that they've come up with, if some of those are at that part of it, then, yeah, we know we're not going to have the same result we did when we did our other one. You're going to have to step through more hoops or whatever. So.
Right. So.
Any more questions for Mark or anything or Galen or?
If you go through it, you want
Terry. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say on the previous year, this is probably that's probably the most completions of projects that was on the 1 year plan that I've ever seen since I've been on the board. I mean, of a lot of finished projects on this list, so a lot got accomplished.
And that's Galen and the road staff, that you guys for giving them the funding and the planning, and they're reasonable projects. So one of the challenges we had, if you think back, was we have an unreasonable 1 and 6. Let's make it a reasonable. That's a result of all the efforts that everybody's done, particularly Galen and his staff, because they're really humming.
Mark, we hear from Washington now with the new president, cutting regulations. Some of these things with the new road regulations, I'm sure, are things that we probably should have done, you know, depending on little narrow bridges that went in, things like that, or things that we wouldn't do anyway. Is there any reason to contact our state senators or the governor about things like this. Where
your new design standards, they did over a year-long hearing cycle. It was very complicated. You guys heard me talking about it. And most counties aren't realizing what I was talking about until they physically see what it's doing to our projects now. So there's no way that'll get reopened. They just approved that. We just have to work within the system and see if it puts burdens on us as we go. As far as the president's regulation deal, that's a state issue. Federal issues, it's still the Corps of Engineers. We're still having a nightmare with those guys. It's taken forever to get permitted. Jeff Fortenberry's office has been working with us in other areas, tracking when we have one that takes forever for this very reason. And we've asked congressional delegates to make sure the president's staff is aware that we're having a problem getting simple permits. It's taking months and months and months where it should take literally weeks. And that's getting worse. So that's someplace that if you happen to be at a meeting and they say, well, what can we do for you? That's the issue. That we got contractors with equipment sitting where we've been waiting 6 months for a permit, and my entire project is a 500ths of an acre, and I can disturb up to a tenth of an acre of wetlands before it ever becomes an issue, and my entire project doesn't have that footprint. Why did that take 6 months?
Is Jeff working with Adrian on this too?
I know Adrian's been involved. They don't get in. They don't have as many issues in his district. But
we're in Adrian's district.
I agree. So I know his staff is involved.
Don just mentioned that at our next meeting, a Reimer from Adrian Smith's office will be here at our meeting.
Who's going to be here?
Jared Reimer.
Jared Reimer. So that's something to make sure that we don't forget, and let's bring that up, or at least.
Yeah, because
they always ask if we have any questions.
That's it, right.
The one time we just sit here, and we didn't bring something up, but now we have something to.
Permitting. It's just ridiculous.
Well, the best thing, too, is as the state increased standards, I'm sure they. Please. They provided funding to offset all the increased costs that they caused?
Yeah.
Excuse me, I meant Congressman Smith, not Adrian, or Senator Smith.
I know, and Terry mentioned, and I think you talked about it earlier on our last year there in 2016, I counted 30 projects that were done, you know, and stuff, which I know the last few years they've been accomplishing a lot of projects, and I always keep looking at the list the next year, though, and it's just as long.
And you got your award for the paving job. You were recognized, and we didn't have anything to do with that. You were turned in by, actually, the contractor thought it was an excellent project. The contractor is the one that turned it in for where it was, what it serviced, and Paulson's actually turned you in. So.
So you reduce that from your fees?
The plaque?
Anything.
Okay, John, or Galen, I guess, John wanted to add in the some of those roads to the six-year plan. Have you added them here, or will we have them by next meeting, or how do we need to make a motion to add them, or what do we need to do, I guess?
Well, I just need to know what you want.
We don't need a motion. He just needs to add.
Just get us the information. We'll add it, and when your hearing comes, we'll present it with you.
At next meeting, we'll have the public hearing. So
John.
I guess you're looking at shouldering work, or you're looking at overlaying.
We're looking at putting them on the 6-year plan for the so that they're out there, so that in the next year, Galen, they have plenty of shouldering work to do yet with the PWF and the Wymore. But we're putting them on that plan so as we go forward in the next few years, we can talk about the shouldering work and any culvert work we need to do before we do an overlay, knowing that an overlay is several years in the future.
Quite a few years.
Quite a few years. Yeah. But instead of doing it like we're doing it now, you do the overlay and then we do the culverts and the shoulder. If some of these roads, if there's a possibility of maybe next year we might look at one of them, or it depends on how all the 1-year plan goes this year. Next year we might look at adding one of those to a 1-year plan, or it might be 2 or 3 years down the road yet. But if we could do some of the shouldering work and the culvert projects before we go do the overlay, then that road right away gets the maximum benefit out of doing that.
The project that was done by Plymouth, Galen, and I forget, it was a where they go right through it and they resurface and they lay it right back down again.
Oh, cold place recycling?
Yeah, but I mean, what was it called? Who was the company that did it? State did it over there, and it looked like it, I assume.
Dustrol did that, I think.
Dustrol, yes. Is that an option?
Oh, it's always an option.
I mean, but we know, I have to know we have the base there, but I mean, as
well,
far
we've got the core. So generally what they did is you identify where your weak point is. They come in, grind it up, add either oil, fly ash, or cement, lay it down, and then capped it. They either capped it with a thin lift overlay or armor coat.
You did get a little overlay on it.
Well, the thing that I'm saying is, you know, a project like we did 3-4 years ago, an overlay of that size probably isn't going to be doable.
No.
You're not going to get the bond issue passed again like that was done. I just think people have constructed down on that. This is a cheaper way of maintenance, a lot cheaper in cost. Am I correct on that?
It depends on how thick you go and what we add to it, but then we have to cap it.
But, I mean, in most cases, they're reclaiming the materials up because they have enough base there to begin with.
They have enough down below and rejuvenating the top.
Yep.
If we got to go deeper, it's more. 3 inches last year and adding cement in up north was about $75,000 a mile. And then the county had to come in doing a double armor coat on top of it. So that gets you to about $90,000 a mile. And they've got to rejuvenate the top 3 inches is what that job was.
Okay. But, I mean, that still would be considerably cheaper than the overlay system that we did. Yes or no?
Yeah, you'd be. Yeah, I mean, we went in and needed the structural thickness. So, like, you know, we were either 3 or 4 inches in some cases. So, and I'd have to see what. I don't even know what asphalt's
going
for.
We were low on the Adams one at about 120 to 30,000 a mile. I think down at Liberty we were over 200,000 a mile. With
so there's the difference between 4 and 3 inches, probably, yeah. And the amount of milling we do.
Yep. But if we wouldn't do this box culvert project down, we could do 3 miles next year right away over here somewhere. Good. At 90,000 a mile. So, except
well,
we just approved the
I
box culvert. So
you'd have to have considerable miles.
No, I know.
To come in and do it.
They got to have miles.
Yeah.
But that box culvert, that would do almost 3 miles of what you're talking about.
But shoulders, culverts, get ready for that overlay. That's good planning. And then we're not jacking around doing that after them and screwing up our paving.
So to add to the six-year plan, John, did you know which roads you were talking about, or get, we want well, Galen Adam or
the ones that you have recommended previously? And if my memory is correct, I don't have all my 1 and 6 year plans or your overlay assessments done, but it's the Pickerel East and West Blacktops, the 36 to 59 goes from Holmesville to Blue Springs. And I think it's also the Odell North Road is in that recommendation.
So we'll get either both of us or one of us will get with you, John, and we'll make sure we get those on there.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Anything else for discussion on 1 and 6?
Quick question again on white topping. Is that ever an option yet on these county roads like this?
I keep telling that industry not to call it white topping, just call it a pavement job.
Or just call it pavement. It's, I mean, we kind of, save all the base work that way.
Well, you do. If the base is good and we've got a concrete guy that'll come in, it has its place. So what you're looking for is a sound base, but just a deteriorated asphalt. Listen, we put 4 inches of ground up asphalt underneath Hickory Road. The key is it uniform enough? And then you end up with a lot of joints on those roads, a lot of panels, so you got a lot of tar work to do forever. But it's an option. Some places where we don't have asphalt is an option, but I have concrete guys. Northeast Nebraska is where the Concrete Pavement Association guy likes to always use those numbers because I've got 3 laydown guys and no hot mix, 3 concrete guys and no hot mix, so they come in and do those cheaper than the hot mix guys will move the plant in for. So you're in that zone where I got to coax somebody to come in to do the concrete. But Paulson's has been willing to do it. They've done your last 2 jobs. They did all of Hickory Road, the Federal Aid portion, and the last part. So yeah, it's an option. It's absolutely an option. And it's driven by the base and the thickness that we're going to need.
And with the asphalt as it keeps going up too, I just wonder Of course, concrete's going up too now, but the lifespan on that should be not even comparable again if we put the right thickness to the white topping, shouldn't it?
Yeah, you know, your hot mix, if we do it all, we went through that way back when, at 20 years, half the people are going to not like the road. Concrete's going to go a little bit longer. Price-wise, it's kind of a push, but I'm going to end up putting 6 inches of concrete down versus 3 or 4 inches of hot mix. So you're going to spend more for the concrete up front. So, you know, it's an option that we certainly can look at when we pick the job. My biggest issue with it is it won't be any of us. Well, maybe some of you guys because you're kind of young, but when that pavement starts to have problems, that concrete, we still have that asphalt down below. So now I've got to remove that white, you know, say 30 years. Say we get 30 years out of it. Now I've got to do something with that concrete sandwich I have, subgrade, deteriorated asphalt, now deteriorated concrete. So I got to take that off to get to where the original problem was. And you got to look at that in the cost of the life cycle of the job, and they tend not to want to talk about that. So that's my big rub with that, is we're burying something for the future guys to deal with. At least with asphalt, we can mill and mine that asphalt and use it in our mix, cold recycle or do whatever, so without having to go through that layer. But it's definitely something to look at, and there's more and more of it.
I just wonder, with the drainage systems we have, I mean, that seems like a good application for that.
But I agree.
I don't know what the cost breakdown is as you thicken that out some, to kind of bridge over the bad spots if they aren't big, or spend a little more money.
Well, you patch. You patch. No, it's definitely a – and the new standards let me go up to 6 inches of concrete before I get into new and reconstruction. So
there's,
if I got
my way around things right there.
Well, it's one of them. So.
Okay. Anything else, John?
What was determined from the awards of the Bridge Match program? What were some of the things that helped counties get theirs over others?
Well, you can see all of the submittals. We did quite a few of them through my office, and we spent a lot of time with all the categories talking about, you know, what's innovative. Some of the things that you guys did were we lumped projects with other counties so that we could get a regional contract, a multiple contract. So the state contracts I've seen don't say it has to be a winner-take-all, but that's what the application alluded to. So we'll bid them. We're dealing with, I get 8 culvert bids. And the low bid for all 3 counties is this guy. But your lowest bid was that guy. So that I haven't figured out exactly. Now, it has to happen, but maybe that'll be dealt with in that interlocal agreement deal. So you take it out and say, well, here's your cost. And we all agree that if that happens, it's just the way it is. I don't know. So that's the big rub there. So the governor and his task force bundling, which you've always done. We've always bundled when possible. The state doesn't really bundle. So that was that. They feel that's innovative. So they like to see that and to see what the results are. Cross-county bundling is another innovative deal. Here again, you know, we do it all the time, but they wanted to see the impacts to the bids. The use of the metal culverts, like our small bridge program, is innovative in their eyes, and different designs of culverts, corrugations, thicknesses, headwalls, box culverts in lieu of bridges, different types of bridges, deck slabs, which you guys have, you know, historically done a lot of, different rail types, open pile vents, different design characteristics. There's some concrete prefab back wall panel type ideas that are out there that normally don't get out because nobody wants to fund the unknown. Well, this program would allow you to do that. So as we went through the application, there were several items. One of them was, why is this important to the county? So we sat down with Galen and said, okay, why this one? you know, well, we looked at the farm operations, the, you know, where it was located, the need in that, in our transportation system, which was easy for us because we know we've been studying your stuff, the traffic numbers, the traffic counts, what have we been doing to do this without this program. So that was a big deal, and we had good write-ups on that, historical perspectives. And so if you look at who got selected and you go to those deals, you guys made a pretty good effort to present your project. Now, one of the criteria is equity. There's 10% is equity. So the next go-round, they're going to say, you don't get that 10% because you got one last time. So the next time they come out, they only did $4 million out of the $40 million. So it wasn't a lot of money. So we're going to have to overcome that 10% equity deal on our next one. So what you need to be thinking about are those projects that we can do that we're stepping out of the box that are truly innovative. The governor truly wants us to be not business as normal. Let's figure out if there's something we're missing. Which is, okay, that's I get it. You know, we live in that world all the time, trying to squeeze whatever out of a nickel. But so that's what we're being forced to do, that's what we're doing. So if you got any place that is like this makes perfect sense because of, or you have ideas of why aren't we doing this, like, you know, we're talking about with pavement, now's the time because you might get some funding availability out of it. You know, building it with our own forces, that's attractive to them because it's already built into our budget. And the governor's all about, you know, reducing property taxes, and that's already a budget item. So it's a material issue then. So a lot that got selected were these tubes. Our county's got tubes. There's a few bridges, some box culverts, but a lot of tubes got picked.
Replacing a bridge with a tube.
Yeah, basically.
Plastic pipe instead of
HDPE.
Yeah. Is there what are your thoughts on that?
The cost wise, it's actually cheaper than steel up to about 30 inches or so, 36 inches maybe, and then over that the cost goes up. Problem is we get I'm not going to say lazy, we get complacent with steel and concrete pipe because it's resilient, and if we don't use the right backfill material or pack fill as good as we should, the pipe survives. HDPE pipe deflects if you don't put the appropriate granular backfill around it, and that adds cost to it.
Is it more than what, I mean, longevity-wise, does that plastic ever
deteriorate? Not the HDPE because it has that sun.
UV blocker.
Yep.
Is that something we should be looking at?
Cause we do all the time. The problem is just its use and how you got to put it in. You know, as we go west, there's some counties that'll use it for driveway pipes, and then the farmers complain because they just crush the crap out of them. And steel, I can go out there with a jack and go, and these you can't. You're toast. So they have their place, but I don't think we're taking prices for them now. I mean, some counties will throw them in there to take price, but I mean, they're readily available and they have their place. But, you know, bigger ones just don't, they fall off the grid because of the dollars. Now, if you're in a hot soil situation, downstream of feedlot and, or some operation that, like Richardson County, where they're still pumping oil and that water comes out, that just burns their stuff up. That's perfect location for that type of application. But if we got steel coming out of there that's been in there for 30, 40 years,
put it back.
Or you look at other coatings. So you go from galvanized to aluminized to polymer coats. And aluminized adds about 20% to the job, and then polymer coats, which is what they used to use in the dams, that adds about 60-70% to a pipe.
And then it's good.
Well, then it goes from theoretically from 50 years maybe to 80 years. You know, theoretically. We won't be here to tell.
Okay. I think we've got our next meeting, we've got the public hearing scheduled, and then we'll have those added by then and talk a little bit about those then, and then we'll need to be voting on that too at that time. So
We'll move on. Next up on the agenda, discuss and approve or disapprove selecting a county board member as a voting member for the NEH annual meeting. And I think normally we do this. This is coming up the 15th NEH annual meeting or whatever. And I think, as far as I'm concerned, we can sure have Eric. It's just that we just need to designate somebody to be our voting member for that meeting.
Eric?
Yep.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, seconded by Lytle, to have Eric Thiemann as our voting member for the NEH annual meeting, which is on February 15th.
Now, will these be electoral votes or popular votes?
I don't want anybody to get mad.
Should have asked that question before you made the motion.
Yep.
Good point.
Vote 7-0 to have Eric as our voting member. Next up, discuss and approve or disapprove response to letter from FOP Lodge 45 requesting county to strike Section 2, which was has been the exclusion of the supervisors from the agreement.
Do we need to do anything with this since we haven't actually entered into formal negotiations yet? We haven't even met with these people.
I'll refer that to Roger.
Basically, and I assume most, did everybody get a copy of Mr. Pigsley's opinion? I would certainly... And I spoke with Mr. Pigsley. I think it would be appropriate to basically reject the request made in these January 4th letter. And again, I understand what you're saying. We haven't really started. Well, he's trying to in kind of a backdoor way. So I think in the, you know, what basically Pigsley says is that's non-negotiable at this point. We're not ready to do that. So I think formality-wise, you have to respond to it. That's what Mr. Pigsley's suggesting. I would echo that, and certainly he understands the intricacies of labor law much better than I. So I would recommend that you formally approve a motion to reject the request of the January 4th, 2017 letter from the FOP through this Christensen fellow.
I would move to reject.
Second.
Motion by Byers, seconded by Bauman. Any other discussion?
Who writes that? Do you take care of that? Roger, do you write a response to them?
I can do it. We can do it. I mean, it's going to be a very simple letter.
Sure.
And I can do that right down to Don for, because the letter was directed to Myron. As chairman of the board, so as opposed to myself, I'll prepare a letter. We'll get that done.
Put it on letterhead.
Letterhead, so that we have a formal response back to it.
Okay.
And it's, we put something in there. We don't appreciate the hostile presentation.
No.
But it's not that we're not willing to negotiate items once we sit down to negotiate items.
Yeah, and again, pointed out that this has nothing whatsoever to do with, you know, ongoing relationships with the FOP or anything.
Absolutely.
Like that. This just totally came out of the blue with this guy.
This is just inappropriate, but we want to continue our relationship, continue working with the sheriff's employees, but this is totally inappropriate.
And this is in response to the January 4th letter, what we received from the FOP. So we were not prepared last time. We had not discussed with our legal team, and that's why we delayed to tell this meeting to have a response. And since we've had a response from Jerry Pigsley, so.
Yep. We have every desire and every intention to sit down and negotiate an appropriate and fiscally responsible mutual bargaining agreement.
Okay. Motion is to deny allowing them back in and sending a letter to the FOP. Vote 7-0 in favor.
Official.
Discuss and approve or disapprove a call-out policy.
We
did this last time. We had at our meeting, our last meeting, we had some discussion. Part of what we have down there at the highway department is like when they get out for the snow basically or whatever, and if they're not up to the 40 hours, they haven't been up to the 40 hours of work, then they're not getting their time and a half or whatever. And I think towards the end of the meeting, then when we had discussion, Gary made the comment that we have a call out policy And I can't remember exactly how Gary worded it, but we're maybe going about this a little bit the wrong way. The call-out policy is for that. It's for when we do have a call-out and there's somebody down there on call in that call-out policy. This, I call it the grading or the snow removal or whatever. We're looking, we've always been considering that part of the call-out policy, and really that should be part of the handbook and the work policy or whatever. I mean, we should be looking at it from that aspect. And it's not a call-out policy so much when you have snow removal or whatever. That's not, yeah, it's work, but it's also part of the job. It's part of the work. I did this morning, and this is just for discussion. We have individuals up at Adams that do this for the state of Nebraska. They do work for the state. They do the snow blading or whatever. His comment, I asked him, what do they do at the state? They have to work their 40 hours before on Saturday to get time and a half. However, with the state, if they one of those days is a holiday, that counts towards the 40 hours. Vacation does not, time off does not, but the state does use a holiday as part of the 40 hours. But if they have to if they get called out on Wednesday night and they don't Thursday or Friday and they don't get to their 40 hours, it's at regular time, not at time and a half. That was his comment. So
now, are we talking about just specifically snow removal, or what are we talking about here?
Well, that's part of the discussion.
I mean, say it rains 5 inches, washes out bridges, people get called in, blah, 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 set up barricades, whatever could happen, some disaster, whatever. Does that mean that, is that treated differently than this then, or how is that? You call that a call out, or do you call that?
That is where we need to make the distinction, I think, between our call out policy and what we. I know the guys down there working consider getting called out or removing snow. They consider that call out or whatever. They consider that above and beyond what their regular job is. And I don't. I'll just be honest. I don't look at it that way. That's part of the job. That's part of what the other entities. Private business, that's part of the job. They know that when they have the job. Now, the issue is we've never had it that way here. So that if we went that route, that's a change, okay? You know, there, your bridge and that, now, then it goes back to in here, we have some wording back in here, it goes back to Galen, like when you're flooding and stuff. I look at snow removal as we're having probably somewhere around 15 people plus going out to remove snow, or maybe the whole crew, you know, somewhere between 15 and the 30, you know, so you're having the workforce go out there. And I'm just doing this for discussion. I'm not saying we do this or whatever.
No. I just, we're done, I just want it clear so we don't talk about this shit again.
Right.
Let's have it right, you know.
Me too.
Do we remove that too?
No, don't remove it.
No.
A lot of this discussion is, are we on a Monday-Friday week or are we on a Sunday-to-Saturday week? And the handbook says we're Sunday-to-Saturday. They've acted as we work a Monday-to-Friday week. So regardless of which way we go, or how we treat each individual thing, we need to decide, are we staying with a Sunday to Saturday, or are we going to treat the highway department to a Monday to Friday week? If it's Sunday to Saturday, that gets rid of a lot of problems right there, which is what the handbook says. Doesn't mean it can't be changed, but that's what it says now.
I'd say leave it Sunday, Saturday.
I'd agree.
Leave the work week of Sunday to Saturday.
If the whole community decides no one's going to drive on the road Saturday and Sunday, then we could close the highway department. If there's not going to rain, snow, or do anything, I mean, it's not like an office where you can just close it. I mean, people are out there driving on the road. Stuff happens, accidents, trees fall on the road, weather, snow. I mean, we have to have a workforce that's available Saturday and Sunday. The thing is, it's such a low-volume issue that these things happen. It's, you know, because of global warming and climate change, we don't get much snow anymore. So, you know, that's less and less. I mean, I thought I'd try to be coy, but I'm...
You're not, huh?
But, I mean, how many snows have we had this year?
Very few.
We all know it'll...
You know, right. But, I mean, you know, eventually the earth axis will change and we'll quit burning coal and all that, and then it'll get cold again. But it's just a low-volume issue. I think we just... But we're at risk of retooling the whole thing, can we just clarify what's a call-out and what's not? And I think we're there. If we change the work week and do all that, I just think we just... We muck it up more. I think if we can just define what's call out, what's not.
There's two people on call. They get paid a stipend each week. Those are the first people that get called out after hours for doing things. I think that's good because if they have to be on call, they should get something for being on call because they have to be available right away. And then there's still a two-hour minimum that they get paid when they do go out, you know, in the evenings or at night or whatever. I think that's good to have in place because if we're going to ask them to be readily available for us, they should get something for that.
Yes, now on that on-call, there's a foreman on-call, one foreman on-call.
Not a second person.
No. If the foreman gets a call and say they have to go out and barricade off a road, then he'll call another individual, at least one guy, because we have a kind of a standing policy not to go out at night just by yourself. Always take at least one guy with you. Now, if it's something major, he may have to call in two or three, but he always calls in at least one person, okay, for whatever it may be.
And that's a good. I think that's a good idea.
Anyway.
And again, I just the economics of it, and I'm kind of shooting from the hip here, but maybe we should pull and find out what are we spending in call-out pay.
I think I told John, and I don't have that with me today, but I think I told you what did I... It was like 300 and some hours that we had.
I don't know that I remember those numbers, but
I don't
any numbers
I'd
actually.
Have to go back and look.
And so, if, you know, so it's 300 and some, so call-out time and a half, so take... You know, basically, whatever those call out hours are times 0.5 because you pay them straight wage anyway, and then times are, you know, we're just let's don't argue over a 6 foot or a 10 foot dog leash here. Let's.
So what you're looking at is if their total, I'm using an estimate of $20 an hour. I don't know what it would be, but if it's $20 an hour and then you're 300 some hours, they're like. Matt said they're going to get paid. They're going to get paid their regular straight time anyway. So then it's half of that 300 hours, or you're looking at $20 times 150 hours, or $3,000 a year, roughly.
It's real money, mm-hmm. But I'm just saying that how much gray matter do we want to put in this? I think you just clarify with the department head when, and so that it's clarified too for when it hits Dawn's payroll. You know, we hire Galen to do a job. We want to have a call-out policy, it sounds like. Here's how we would like you to administer it. Make sure it's crystal clear when it comes to Dawn's office so you guys don't have to play telephone.
Yes. And then we don't
that's
have
my, to... That's my opinion. That's my discussion. Is let's don't overthink this, but let's. It probably needs some clarification.
Gary?
90% of those hours are going to get time and a half anyway. We all sitting around here don't like... policies and regulations that are excess to what needs to be. I have my personal feeling is that this is an excess policy that does not need to be. We have the on call. Right now we're paying one person to be on call with a stipend. I'd say you have two people on call at all times. On call is if this on call person has to go out, then that's your call out pay. As far as everything else, it's part of the business. Most of the time they're going to get their time and a half because they've worked their 40 hours in the week anyway. We've created a policy for people that have a tendency to not have their 40 hours in, so now they want time and a half because they haven't put their 40 hours in. I don't see any reason to continue to do this. We put it in, what, 2-3 years ago?
Yep.
And we've had nothing but friggin' headaches with it ever since. Just get rid of it and be done with it.
Well, there's always been a call-out policy. It just wasn't written down, so we wrote it down. There's always one. That's why we wrote it down, is because it wasn't written down.
That's just the history.
But you make a very good point. The $3,000 that I even mentioned, most of the majority of those people will have worked their 40 hours during the week. So they're going to be a time and a half anyway. So that $3,000 that was going to cost you extra, that's costing you extra in the overtime because of the snowstorm, not because of where we run into a few issues, which, like Gary says, we run into about one, two, three times a year where somebody doesn't have their 40 hours in, and now they're not getting their time and a half. That's where we run into the issue.
Yeah. And the other thing, let's be honest with it, is you've created, or there's subjectivity that is created with a call-out policy or whatever, where Galen has to make a decision and has to decide yes, no, whatever on it. And you've put a burden on his back where sometimes it's created issues for Galen for making that decision. And I'd just say you take the decision, making part of it off, and he doesn't have to worry about it anymore.
The only problem that I see, the way it currently is set up, and it's the call out is wasn't an issue. The guys know if they get called out at night or whatever, then that falls under call out policy. The problem that we run into is when, like during the week, okay, say somebody has a vacation day on Monday. I'm using that for an example, okay, and then Saturday night we get a blizzard. So he's called in to work on Sunday, but he legitimately, for the way it's wrote up, he hasn't got his 40 hours in. Okay, but that's where the problem falls in.
He hasn't worked his 40, but he's been paid for 40. Because he got a paid for
He took a vacation day.
He got vacation.
You know, not knowing there's a blizzard coming in on Sunday or Saturday night or Sunday, you know, or he probably would have not taking a vacation. I can't speak for everybody, but I mean that's the scenario that plays out, you know, on there. That's the only problem that we really have is when that happens. And it used to be the holidays didn't count as for your 40 hours either. So if you had a holiday, same thing, and then you had a storm, you still didn't work your 40 hours. Okay.
And we had that, I think with the ice storm, we had that or something. There was a holiday happened to fall there.
There's a bunch of holidays there in a row, yeah.
Yeah, and believe it or not, we have a holiday, at least one holiday every month on the calendar. So,
not every month.
Yes, we do it.
12 a year.
We have 12 holidays.
12, but it's not every month.
Oh, it's not every month. Well, we have 12 holidays. Okay.
Myron was saying on average there's one a month.
On average there's a holiday a month. Okay. Yeah. And that's where you run into that issue of not the 40 hours.
I heard that conversation at my other place of employment where somebody didn't get overtime on, it was on Thursday. They would have gone on overtime, but they didn't get it because they took a vacation day to go do whatever, Christmas shop, look at, I don't know what they did. Doesn't matter, it's their time. And the answer I got, the answer I heard when it was in response to you weren't on overtime because it didn't count towards it, sounds like we have too much vacation time. So, I mean, that's the other side of the coin is we have too much vacation time. Do we have too many paid holidays? Do we have too many freebie days, too many bonus days, too many get paid for nothing days? I'm not saying that we do, but you know, that's the other side of the coin, is that's free money for existing. And, I mean, we have to be thankful for all the freebies we get, too. You know, we're very fortunate to be able to have steady employment, holidays, insurance, other benefits. I mean, there's a lot of benefits anywhere you're at. The county, I think, has a very nice benefit package. And sooner or later, there has to be some appreciation for the things that we do have also, I think. If we don't have overtime because we've taken vacation days or we have holidays or freebie days, that's a really hard argument for me as an employee to come to my employer and say, you didn't give me enough. Instead of coming to the employer and saying, thank you.
If I look in the employee handbook under the index, exactly what page is freebie days on? I think
we're going to have to change the handbook headings.
Easier to find.
Simplification.
What do we want to do? Does somebody want to make a motion, or do we want to, at committee meeting, we hammer out a motion, or what does everybody want to do?
What do you think, Terry?
You feel okay?
I feel fine.
Okay, all right.
I'm just listening.
John, check his ears. Make
sure. I think it should be Galen's discretion.
We're open to a motion, or I need a motion, or need somebody to say.
A motion, that's just my thoughts.
That's your thoughts. Or we'll look at next committee meeting, we will make something to vote on the 15th.
We're waiting for then.
Then I need a motion today. That's what I'm waiting for.
I'd make a motion that Galen make a presentation or make a proposal to clarify and present that to the board for consideration. We've talked about this a lot.
That's right.
We hire you to do a job. What's going to clarify it for you? Give us a starting point.
Well, Matt.
I say one confusion.
The problem is, we don't even know what the hell to do. How do we expect Galen to
come up with something? I know exactly what to do.
Motion.
We've got this policy. We hire him to do a job. If we want to pay people for a call out outside of normal working hours, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, recognizing that if you take vacation, if you're off, if you're sick, those are non-work, non-benefit hours. And too bad that you took a day off on Monday and you only got 32 hours. You're going to work if it's not call out. You're still going to get paid for that vacation. You're still going to get your 32 hours of work time. That's great. If it's not call out, then it's straight. If it's call out, then you get time and a half. I don't know why it's so confusing if we let Galen administer it and clarify it with Dawn and be very succinct about it. Otherwise, we're micromanaging that gentleman's department. Yep. We either give him the tool and let him use it or take the tool away. We beat this thing around for months.
But we can't complain to him later.
No, but we have a motion. We need a second for that motion that we have Galen come forward with a clarity of the policy.
Or he might say, get rid of it.
Okay.
We
need a second for that motion, then we can have discussion and vote on that motion. We have a motion that allow Galen to come forward with a policy and clarify it.
Second.
Okay, motion by Bauman, second by Byers. Now discussion on that.
I think we're passing the buck by shoving it down to Galen, and what's more, I think that just starts leading to more friction. Galen needs to, if he's going to do this is what he's been doing now, is deciding what it is, but then he has to come to us and we complain to him about it because there's misinterpretation. I think whether we like it or not, we have to decide something, and we can talk to Galen about it and say, this is what it is, so that he knows. I don't think you care either way, just as long as there's an answer so that we can explain to the employees and everybody else so there's no question on it.
I think that's Eric hit on right on the nose, is that we need to make a decision. We need to move forward. Everything else will take care of itself, and if there's a wound that's created, it'll be healed quicker by getting the process done and moving forward, whether it's one way or the other.
But we did do that, and now we're talking about it 3 years later.
But we haven't, Matt.
Yes, we did. This policy is the place that we created.
Yeah, we created it, but it created more issues.
I get that.
It created more issues.
All right, well, you got a motion.
Yep, we have a motion, we have a second. Any more discussion? And the motion is to have Galen come forward, try to have it by our next committee meeting so we can have discussion on it then already, to come forward with the policy so that we can have discussion and vote on it. Is that the motion?
Or amend it, yeah.
Or amend it.
What works for you?
Everybody ready? Vote. 5 in favor, Jurgens, Hill, Bauman, Dorn, and Byers, and Lytle and Thiemann oppose.
So. One question. Does a holiday count towards 40-hour work week? I mean, I know the sick time don't, I know vacation don't, but I heard something mentioned about a holiday will count towards your 40 hours.
That we'd have
Actually,
to.
So the state does that
right now.
The state. I know the one I said was the individual I visited with from the state. The state's policy is that a holiday does count.
Our handbook currently says you have to physically work.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was a state policy, Galen, that I talked about. Yeah.
And that's the way it would be without outside of amending the handbook
right.
to change.
Right. The handbook currently says that unless we
could be done.
And this is the one you need to go by. What our handbook currently states. That's the one. If the policy is going to be outside that or whatever, that's what it needs to use is our handbook.
And with that said, at least for myself, I would be open to considering that holiday as time worked, and then maybe rolling the on-call back to more define it, kind of what Gary was talking about earlier, you know, when the on-call foreman is called in the middle of the night and he calls a couple of guys to go help him, you know.
And Galen, visit with your guys. Don't be afraid to visit with Terry. If you need to call me or anybody, feel free to call us, okay? And we hate to throw this on your shoulders, but we need somebody to come forward with something.
Will do.
Yeah. Okay.
Myron.
Sorry to
pass that. Separately, what I was talking about as far as on-call is that we're requiring two people to be called out.
Yes.
So to have one person get paid an on-call stipend and the second person is going to be required to go out, that,
yeah.
To me it seems silly that there's a second person that's not getting the stipend.
Well, I'll kind of
be two people always on that stipend.
I'll kind of echo that, because if your policy is at night, we always send two people out,
yeah.
Basically 90% of the time that on-call is going to be two people going out. So maybe instead of one person on call all the time, you need two people on call.
But the foreman pick who he wants to go out with.
Yeah. Because
somebody may call the first guy and he says, hey, I just got back in from my whatever emergency and I'm not really in a shape to go out there. And so he calls second guy.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm just saying, or he might be sick.
But then
he'll get paid, right? The second guy that goes out with the foreman.
Yeah, he gets a minimum 2 hours.
He gets the extra pay too.
Yes.
Yep. Not the $50 stipend though.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But the person that goes out, he's not required to stay in within say Gage County for the whole week.
Oh,
see,
because okay.
they can't take off and go to Omaha unless they have somebody, another foreman, cover for him.
Okay.
Right. Whereas he can call anybody out there if they're not home. That's the difference.
What do you get as feedback, Galen, as far as how difficult is it to get that second person to go out?
Just depends on the weekend, what's going on. You know, sometimes they have to call, you know, several people to get somebody to come
or
out.
Or if somebody's taking vacation or...
Yeah, so, I mean, they...
It's Odell Shrimp Feed, you know.
Yeah, the Odell Shrimp Feed, Diller Shrimp Feed, the Liberty Shrimp Feed, Thank you, Galen.
Come pick me up, sir.
I put on here, the next thing was up, discussion on legislative bills a little bit. There's two of them that are going to have some effect with the Beatrice 6. One of them is 353, and that public hearing is at, or the committee hearing is today at 1:30. The other one, the 656, that was entered by Senator Baker also, that could have some effect on maybe a settlement way forward on the Beatrice 6. That has been scheduled for March 8th at 1:30. So Melody from our legal team said she would be at the one today, not testifying or anything. I also put it on there, as far as I'm concerned, we as a board don't need to take any position on anything, but I didn't know if anybody wanted to come up, have that as a discussion item, if somebody wanted to take a position on it. As far as I'm concerned, I sure don't intend to testify or nothing or do anything. I'm going to try and go to them just to watch, as was Melanie. But NACO did call. Elaine called Don and also called myself, and the NACO board did decide to take a position in favor of the 353 because of the impact it could have on all of the counties. So she didn't say if they were going to testify today or not, but their position was to be in favor of 353. So
I would guess they'd testify. I don't know for sure, but I would guess.
I don't know either, but yeah. But
my personal opinion would be having a big open purse that any county can borrow from, so lawsuits have a place to feed off of. Bottom feeders, I'm sorry, Roger. Attorneys have a place to pull funds. That's the thing. Those guys... That's the only thing they have at heart. It's not the public. It's not the taxpayer. It's not the county. It's lining the lawyers' pockets. Yep. That's why the lawyers presented this. It wasn't...
The Trial Lawyers Association.
Yeah, it was the Trial Lawyers Association. It wasn't NACO. It wasn't any of these people looking out for the counties. This is strictly a way for lawyers to get their money. I'm really against this one. I think it's a terrible idea.
Big old sucking sound.
That's exactly what it is.
We started calling Roger Catfish Harris.
Hey, I again, I think you nailed it. And I don't know why somebody else didn't see that. You know, beware of the people that bring you gifts.
Yes.
Leave it at that.
It doesn't absolve the counties from paying astronomical judgments. It just allows those that bring the lawsuits and the judgments there to get paid. So then what's the limit?
And the next thing that's going to happen is you're going to have a plaintiff's attorney that's going to pop off about, oh, there's a fund out there. Don't worry about the county not having enough money.
Mm-hmm. It
oh, you can't say that. I'm sorry.
Instead of us having to figure out what to do or putting us... Yeah. You know, making us work within our means, within our budgets, it fast-tracks it. It gives us an open checkbook, but the taxpayer still has to pay every dime back plus interest. This absolves us from absolutely nothing.
I will agree with you as far as looking at just Gage counties and their Beatrice 6 situation. This bill would the one positive thing is if we end up paying a judgment, it would benefit us in the fact that we could now borrow it cheaper. The negative thing and the big negative thing for it is I guarantee you the trial lawyers, they will be thinking they're going to get that extra funding.
And I must say that doesn't benefit us because we can borrow it cheaper because I will say we can't borrow it. If this goes
it's going to complicate settlement negotiations immensely. I hate to put this out in the public, but folks, this is just not it. I mean, everybody's getting a step ahead. It's like those guys in Walmart. Yep. Everybody calm down and let the board look at the options that were being presented. And I just leave it at that because, people need to understand this elected body has done a great job in dealing with a 30-year-old problem they got dumped on. And we all forget that. And it's like I have people come up and, sorry you lost that case. I didn't try the case. But that's the mentality out here that you people are the ones responsible for this. You're dealing with the mess, okay? And again, I think we need to remember that. We've talked to other folks, and I think this legislation, and I'm not going to say what the intent was, but it's ahead of itself.
Yes.
And I think Myron's made that comment, and I just, everybody settle down, let the Eighth Circuit take a look at this thing, then we'll take it, see where we're at.
That's right. And the Eighth Circuit, it's appeal. We're not guilty, and we're going to appeal it, and we're going to win it.
I'm going to make a motion.
Did I make myself clear?
I'm going to make a motion. You're going up there. I will give you authority to give the opinion here. If this is the opinion of the board, which I don't know if it is or not, this is definitely my opinion, that at the hearing there, give my opinion, or if it's the opinion of the board, that we are not in favor of this and we think it's a bad decision to... A bad decision for our county, a bad decision for negotiation, and a bad decision for the state to offer out basically a never-ending fund against lawsuits.
I would just suggest that you just say, as a board, it's premature right now.
Yes.
We still have options we're looking at. There's so many nuances that if you take a position here, it can come back. Because we may have to work with folks. I'm not saying you guys always are willing to do that. I don't like that taste, but I would just say, let's take a look.
I understand your motion. I agree with Roger's comments here. We're getting all ahead of ourselves. These bills are ahead of themselves. I mean, they're there.
Well,
that's just it.
They shouldn't be there, but they're there.
Truthfully, the legislature, Senator Byers knows, they're the ones that are going to have to decide if they're going to put this out there or not. And do that. And now, all of a sudden, all the funding issues they have, and now they're going to make more funds available for something. I don't see them doing it. Now, I don't know if they'll pass or not. I have no idea.
You never know for sure, but I doubt if they will. I doubt if it'll even get out of committee, but I don't know.
And it could be an awareness that they're just bringing something to the forefront, because this is going to impact insurance, NACO, and that's why I'm like, NACO, come on.
I'd modify that motion then to say, give you authority to say we think this is premature and we are not in favor of it. Then I think we should say something.
You think our board should take
this dish?
Regardless of whether it's premature or not, it's out there. We asked. I asked personally Senator Baker not to introduce it, and he did anyway. I said I strongly caution you not to introduce this, and he did anyway. That's his prerogative. He's looking at things from a different point than what we are. I'm looking at it from Gage County's perspective.
But you made that emotion. So since you made that emotion, do we have a second for that?
Sure.
Second. Okay. Motion by Thiemann, seconded by Lytle. Any more discussion? I will sit up there and say that it's premature and that we haven't had a settlement and stuff like that because of this motion. I will do that and stop.
Now, what Eric said was is that whatever the board's message is, I don't think that we've said that this is our board's message, though. So.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I can spout off and say what I think, but without the – I don't want you to go and say it if it's not the opinion of the board, but that's definitely my opinion.
Right. Yeah. That's the motion I seconded was is that saying giving you permission to say whatever the board's message is, the board hasn't said what their message is. I mean, so
other than that it's premature and we're still don't have a settlement.
So that's going to be our message.
Withdraw your motion.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Yeah,
I agree.
No, we have a motion. We have a second. Any more discussion? If you don't like it, then we'll vote it down. I mean, you vote for it.
I introduced this trying to help us. He didn't anticipate the lawyers coming in on this and just backing anyway.
The lawyers gave it to him.
So
the Trial Lawyers Association gave it to him.
We have a motion.
Senator Baker.
Eric's motion. A vote. We're in favor. Hill. Three in favor.
You where you want me?
Hill, Lytle, Thiemann.
Voting against the motion? Yeah.
Against Juergens, Bauman, Dorn, and Byers.
Valiant effort.
You will valiant. Sit quietly, Myron.
I will sit quietly, yes. Thank you.
That's you yourself.
You can
all
right. If you can roll your eyes. Mr. Chairman, I need to excuse myself.
You need what? You excuse yourself. Well, we're going to take a 5-minute break. I know we have one more thing or two more things on the agenda. We're going to take a 5-minute break.
I'm going to make a motion.
Time and a half. Time and a half. Let's go. Double time.
You made that call out.
Double time. We're back in session at 10:52 on the clock. The next up is approve or disapprove letter of financial commitment from Gage County to Blue River Area Agency on Aging and having a chairman sign the letter.
I want to hold you up for a second. John, did you have a motion?
Well, in light of that other motion failing, I'll make a motion that this board is in no way restricting Myron from testifying today if he feels necessary to testify.
I second that.
Any discussion? Right now today, I don't feel like testifying and going up there. I don't plan on it, but if something's said or something, then we'll see.
Let me amend that motion. Myron or any other member of the board is in no way restricted from testifying.
I think me or anybody. Yeah.
I'm okay
if they feel
that.
Necessary.
So clarification, Roger, so everybody understands what is being thrown out here. We're not saying that anybody... What your motion is, yep. John, is that anybody can go up there and speak on their own private part.
Right.
As an individual.
As an individual. Right. You're not saying they're free to go speak as the board.
Because we haven't really decided on a
position.
Statement that we want to make in regards to that.
Yeah, just wanted to make sure we were clear on...
Yep.
We're clear. But if anybody did testify, they'd be free to... Give the opinions of other board members and feel free to use names if you choose.
The motion is to not prevent Myron or anyone to testify at the hearing as an individual.
Or any board member. Yeah.
Any board member.
As an individual. As an individual. Yep.
And I think your standing rules would, I'm sure, cover something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hill, we had a motion by Hillman. Motion by Hill and a second by Lytle.
No.
Second by Thiemann.
Second by Thiemann is what I have.
Vote. 6-0 in favor.
Do we want to restrict Gus, though?
Yeah. Well, Gus is confined to the county, so since he's on duty, so yeah. the letter to Blue River Area Agency on Aging. Okay, this is what they called again and asked for this. This was like last year, and we I think Don maybe has a similar copy of the letter.
This is for this year.
I'll just read it quick. commitment to Blue River Area Agency on Aging. We are pleased to offer our commitment to the aging services, including transportation services offered by Blue River Area Agency on Aging. As a member of the interlocal agreement to offer these services, we are very supportive of all the services providing to the older population in our county. Specifically, I commend Gage County to support the service at or near the current level of support with payments to be invoiced quarterly by Blue River submitting a claim to the Gage County clerk. Sincerely.
Last year, we gave him $34,860, and that's identical to the letter you sent last year. Now, whether you
and what they need something like this for their
Department
for their
of
purposes.
Roads application is due earlier this year, so that's why they're asking
that's
for
why
it.
That's why
you say at or near. Near is under, right, and not over.
Could be over too, but. How did we come up with that number? Just wondering.
They came back. We lowered it, and then they came back and
they asked
you guys
for more
and
because
wanted
of the
it raised back up, and you gave it back to them. And so this is the amount that was last year.
So this is
what they're asking.
At or near the current level. That's what it says.
From what Matt had said before, are we just?
It could be a little. It could be above.
That's the only concern I have is if you decide to do something different with the agency.
This does not tie us into a specific dollar amount, and we had that discussion last year. We're not going to commit to a specific dollar amount, okay?
I know, but we're committing to support them at or near the amount that we did last year. We're making that commitment, so it is a dollar amount. At or near, and near could be over.
Yeah, and if
that's a good point.
It's basically a pre-budgetary type of, we'll be there for at least this much.
So if you guys decide to cut all the agencies, you're not going to be able to do it if you make this commitment now to this one, right?
Well, I think at this time we still need to do it.
If a disaster comes up and we have to cut, the board will make a decision. And I can't speak for the board, but I think it's going to be one of those...
And
that would be all these other ones, too.
Specifically, I commit Gage County to support the services at or near the current level of support.
Did we answer?
This needs to be set up on our budget cycle when we're doing this commitment letter, if we're going to continue to do commitment letters. My opinion. Because we're month of February, which is halfway through our budget cycle, and we're putting a commitment letter out there for...
Here's the email that I received from Carla on Monday. Our Nebraska Department of Roads application for 2017-18 is due even earlier than it was last year, March 1st, 2017. Due to an oversight in our office, we are now informing you of this date and asking for a continuing letter of support for the same funding level as last year, $34,860. This support guarantees that the citizens of Gage County will continue to receive the valuable services we offer. An email from your office providing this documentation will suffice. Thank you for your support of our agency services to the aging population and the public transportation provided to citizens of Gage County. Carla Brazy, fiscal officer.
Can we put something in a response to say I understand why they're doing it earlier. The Department of Roads is making it or whatever. But with what Matt said on the other stuff, can we say that we intend to commit this, if that's what you guys want to do? But tell them that our intent is there, but if something comes up, it's obviously going to go away.
Instead of I commit Gage County, we
intend to commit?
I want to support them, but this is just our cycle. It's out of,
We had this discussion last year, too, if you remember. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's out of our cycle. It's something, though, that for their to try and get this grant and this other stuff, they have to have these or whatever.
Right. So how do we tell them, though, and then with A, B, C, D, other agencies come in here and start doing this also?
No, that's a good point. And again, the Department of Roads knows what the cycle is for the counties. They're actually putting Blue Rivers in the middle of this dilemma. Because they're obviously dependent upon the counties for continued existence. I think it's one of those things. I don't have any problem. What Gary's suggesting is a little hedge language as far as to the best we can see. But, I mean, every county right now is looking at, you know, decreasing ag values. I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen in the next 4 months. We all hope everything's going to be the same as it's been the last several years. And that letter is just kind of interesting, the NDOR is asking for.
What she has here.
But, again, you guys have dealt with NDOR on several other issues.
So what do you want to change on here, I guess, sir? It says specifically, I sign it, but specifically, I commit Gage County to support the services at or near the current level.
Roger, I guess another question. The 34,280, would we be wise to go ahead and put that hard number in there as opposed to just saying that we're financially committed to BRAA? Because what happens if there's some big lawsuit or something? We're financially committed. All of a sudden, are we financially committed?
But again, you know, I don't know. This is an extra budgetary procedure. You guys aren't looking at your budget for next year. I mean, maybe like with the 1-6 year road, you're starting to put the parameters on where the money's going to go. But you've got certain things that you absolutely have to fund by statute. Okay. This one is one of those, we want to fund you, and I will commit that I will continue to fund because you provide a valuable service, But when you start your hearing process and going through to review your budget, like you just said, if all of a sudden, look at the state, we don't have the capability of finding $900 million. And we're, you know, obviously with this other $30 million thing hanging on your head, that may be, you know, we may have to deal with that come budget time. I mean, we all think it'll be a little later, but nobody controls the Eighth Circuit.
This was a letter that she sent to us, or to me, last year. As you may be aware, Blue Rivers Area Agency has new director. Zoe has been Olson, and we have been working on the Nebraska Department of Roads application for our new year that begins on July 1, 2016. This application is due earlier than it has been in the past and has new requirements that must be submitted with the application. The requirement that directly affects the counties and cities that we serve is that a letter of support from each entity provide assurance of continued support and level of local match has to accompany the application, which is due to the Nebraska Department of Roads on April 22, 2016. As you are aware, Gage County's local match support of our services was $34,860, and we are asking for that same level of support to guarantee that the citizens continue to receive the valuable service we offer. an email. So they've apparently moved it up from April 22nd to March 1st, but that's the first time we had to do this. It was last year, and that's the email she sent me last year.
I mean, I'd certainly be willing to look at, because I don't think, just because NDOR is asking for us to make a commitment on next year's budget, that if we don't come through with that, who's going to sue us?
Yeah.
NDOR?
Yeah.
And again, I can't tell you that. I hate to ask for a lawsuit and find out they can. I'd much rather check it, because my first call is going to be, why are you putting counties in this kind of a position? If you say, are you considering the same level of funding as you did last year? Absolutely. We get a good benefit for our bank for the buck.
I don't understand
outside of the budgetary process how they can ask somebody to basically,
and that's why the wording's
like
at
it.
Or near.
I'd move to approve a letter that's been reviewed by Roger that shows that we intend to continue to support them, or we anticipate, or some language that some lawyer it up some for us that we intend to do it.
Says it's due by March, or she says by March 1st they have to have it in, so that's...
Okay, all right. If you want to just table it, I'll do some checking, see what if I can bring some more information.
We can actually table in a meeting yet. Can't wait till the 15th, if it's due by March 1st.
Yeah.
We should be able to get it to him, because if I email it...
You're going to withdraw the motion?
Okay.
Somebody want to move to table it?
Until
the February 15th meeting.
Second.
Motion by Byer, second by Lytle. Vote. 7-6-0.
All right.
the only other thing I have is closed session personnel and litigation update and stuff. So, so I entertain a motion 11:05 in the clock to go into closed session for necessary for the protection of public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual.
So moved.
Motion by Lytle, seconded by Teeman. Vote.
Sheriff, what's your new
6-0 in favor? Entertain a motion to come out of closed session at 11:37 on the clock. 11:38 on the clock.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, seconded by Hill. Vote. 6-0 in favor. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Hill and seconded by Byers. Vote. 5 in favor with Lytle voting no. Adjourned.
Well, and Teeman.
Oh, hold it. No, 4 in favor.
Bauman's gone.
Correction.
Oh, wait.
Bauman was gone, so his vote wasn't there. 4 in favor with Lytle and Teeman voting against.
4-2.
4-2.
Four to two.
One of these days, that motion to adjourn.